Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
Welcome in to, let's just say, an awkward transition, because there is no John, there is no Lance. It's me and Nick. Nick, you know Nick. He'll be with you throughout the rest of the afternoon, if you can call this the afternoon. He'll be here with... is Charlie in today?
No, he's not. He is not. So he is off today. I think we're running national. He'll be back next week at some point.
Okay.
The press box and the blitz will be at Stacked Pickle on remote.
Okay. And myself and you will be doing the Charlie block tomorrow. I could not do it yesterday. That's why national was a thing. Yesterday, it's because I had to get teeth removed, so I couldn't be available. But
teeth removed?
Teeth, yes. One was broken, the other just bad, so they had to take a couple out. Just a weird experience, because I've never had oral surgery before, and it was I didn't feel it in terms of pain. I just, you know, you're sitting there and someone's using what feels like pliers to yank your teeth out.
What about post, like after the fact? Did you have
not bad? I mean, they give you the stronger Tylenol and they give you the ibuprofen, which you take that one when you have to be awake. Apparently, the Tylenol is supposed to put you to sleep. Some weak stuff, like the over-the-counter sleeping pills I get sometimes when I can't go to sleep, were stronger than that Tylenol they gave me. So it's fine. I mean, the gauze is in your mouth for as long as it needs to be.
What is that, Tylenol 3? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, Tylenol 3. Some codeine involved, yeah.
Oh, they put codeine. That's what makes it different.
Yeah, but it was whatever. I mean, the pain, it's a painkiller, which is great.
I like codeine. I mean, I can handle codeine.
I mean, it's fine. I mean, the codeine was fine in terms of killing the pain off. It just didn't make me sleepy like they said it would. I was still up hours after I took it. So it's whatever. But pain is minimal, if that. So I'm good. But John told me he wasn't going to be here like at 9:30. He goes, oh, by the way, it's going to be you and Nick. From 10 on, I'm like, what are you talking about?
He told me this last week.
He didn't tell me at all until 9:30. So I didn't have an hour of stuff prepared, but we'll get through it. There's plenty of stuff to talk about. The finals are on last night. We have a couple giveaways for boxing and WWE, so stay tuned for that. We're not going to do Throw Shade Thursday. It's only because that feels like a thing unique to, you know, John. Really?
I'm not good at, now that I'm on the show.
No, it's not
we
that.
We can't do Throw Shade Thursday.
No, I'll tell you one thing about me. I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to be the lead host for Throw Shade Thursday, so we'll do it next week.
That's cool.
When John's back. That's his
probably a anyway. Good thing.
Yeah.
You never know where the shade is going to be thrown. So
I'm not even afraid of that. It's a simple fact that I don't want to do it. I mean, let's be honest. I don't feel like doing it today.
We're a day removed from Friday. Who cares?
Yeah, I'm missing teeth. I don't want to do it. So we'll do it. So we'll do it on Thursday when John's back. He didn't prepare anyone for this. So I'm gonna say I'm not prepared. So we're not gonna do it. But obviously, you can call in if you'd like. And like I said, stay tuned. We're gonna be giving away stuff throughout the hour, so I can give you a chance to win something. Considering we kind of ambushed you with this different lineup for the next hour.
Did you guys exhaust the whole Richard Sherman? Not to like pry in a topic here, but did you guys exhaust the Richard Sherman stuff? Because I felt like the call, that 911 call, was published after y'all show yesterday, correct?
We did not play it yesterday. We played a snippet of it. No, we played a snippet of it today, of the part where she was discussing his concern with the police and what, and he just... And them coming, and you know, it's about a 3.5 minute call, and it's a back and forth where Lance touched on it. But I guess the 9/11 operators can't really get into the empathetic part of that call or that job, because they have to get all the correct information, have to send the right people to the right place. But you know, this woman is having maybe the worst moments of her life.
Yeah,
and the 911 operator is like, I heard that, but. What is going on? You hope in those situations you hear some sympathy, but you don't.
And stop interrupting me. I'm trying to do my job.
Yeah,
that was basically what you sounded like.
I guess that's how you have to get the job done, because you're dealing with frantic people who may not be clear of mind. You just have to kind of keep them on track so you can get the right, like I said, the right people to the right spot.
She asked for her birth date, and I felt like when she said it the first time, it was clear enough, but she kind of gave it in like a numeric format. Like she said 3/20-something/88 or something like that when she asked for Richard Sherman's birthday. But then she had to like say it out super clear for her. I don't know. I was tweeting back and forth with somebody, and I was like, is that how some... there's got to be dispatchers out there that have bad days and kind of have those issues. Or maybe she was like... maybe there was like 5 minutes left on the clock, and she just wanted to go home. I don't know.
She was abrupt. She was pretty straightforward, and maybe that's just her way of going through the process as to not only make sure the people who are involved are going to be safe, but the people she's sending into the situation have access to as much information as possible. But I would have, it just felt like, ooh, you're being a little rough, but maybe that's just the way it is. Well, I hope that turns out in the best possible fashion for everyone involved. It sounded like an ugly or potentially devastating situation. And Lance, he knows, he has some things he added to the story about this isn't the first time the police have been called to a residence involving Richard Sherman in the last month or so, in the months leading up to this. So it seems like maybe it's a more longstanding issue than a one-time thing. So hopefully everyone involved gets help, and particularly Richard Sherman. He seems to be the one who needs help the most.
Two bottles, I mean, one brown, one clear. I guess because he's kind of a big guy, but that is damaging to anybody's soul. Two full bottles, regardless of how big you are. Maybe if he just stopped at Hennessy or something like that. Like, I think he had a bottle of Hennessy and something else, right? Was it vodka was the other one?
I don't remember what the alcohol content was, but I mean, I hope, you know, it's weird to say, but you would hopefully this was just a drunken
moment.
Yeah. But because there's some implications that this could be far more serious than that. You know, people have speculated about CTE. I don't know, whether it's depression or I don't know, but alcohol would be as bad as it is and as bad as it sounds surrounding it. Alcohol would be the least destructive as it is. There are ways to, you hope, cope. But if it's more than that, it's...
the reason why it's scary to me is because in the call, in the 911 call, it sounded like she was trying to be like preventative of something, like she knew what was coming. And this is not me trying to single out Richard Sherman, like, oh, this is a repeat offense. Like, this is clearly has happened before. He has a problem. Because we really don't know if it is. Like, CTE is one of the possibilities that a lot of people are bringing up. And so you don't want to like rush to judgment. And you're, just like you said, it might be just a moment. But that was the concerning part, just because it sounded like she was trying to be preventative. She didn't want to get him in trouble, you know, but she was just trying to prevent what she thought could potentially happen. And
yeah, if he's a man who's breaking into a house or getting into an altercation with the in-laws or just family in general, you never know how that'll transition when you bring officers who have the means to subdue someone, whether it be by lethal force or tasing. And, you know, that has to be a concern for someone. If you know someone who's in that state of mind, how does that end? Does it end peacefully or does it end tragically?
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised she would have had that on her mind. I did see Freddie. You want to talk Bucks and Suns? So if you want to do that, please call back in. We'll get into that because it was the biggest actual sporting event of the night. And because the NBA will provide reasons for controversy when you least expect it, I'm a fan of the refs' act last night. Partly because I don't have any rooting interest. Like, if I was a fan of the Suns or the Bucks, I'd be pissed. Whether it be because Devin Booker should have fouled out long before he did, or because Giannis had his foot in bounds when he threw it in bounds at the end of that game. I mean, it's a simple thing that we see all NBA players do. They have one foot out of bounds. They lift one up because they want to make a quick inbounds pass before the defense is ready. Giannis still had a foot down on the ground in bounds, and it should have been a violation. It was not. So there are multiple blown calls in the under and the reports. I mean, they do the under 2 minute report, and that's one thing. But for the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game, it could have been missed call. If they did that report, it'd be pretty full. So we can get into that. We also can talk, you know, the Astros will be back tomorrow. I mean, there's not much to talk about other than the season renews. And the last time we saw any of our Astros, because, you know, they all backed out who could have gone to the All-Star game. They all backed out. The last time we saw them, they were ripping off Altuve's jersey, which set off another controversy, at least particularly for ESPN. So if you're just tuning in and wondering where the hell the people you're familiar with are, well, I would be here anyway, but John's out. He has someplace to go. He won't be here tomorrow either. Nick and I will take you to 11, and then you have national programming because Charlie is out, and then the press box at 1. So we'll get you through the hour and hopefully through the rest of your day on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
No, John. He decided that, I guess he told Nick last week that he wouldn't be here for the final hour of the show. He told me at 9:30. That's when I found out. So it's just me and Nick until 11, and then we'll have some national programming, and then the press box followed by the Blitz. Those two shows will be out at, what's it called again?
Stacked Pickle.
Stacked Pickle. So it's a new, it's, I don't think any of us have ever been out there before as far as a show before.
I don't think so either.
No.
So out on FM 1960. I don't think I've ever been there. So
they just, they're just joined up with us, and we're going to do a show out there, which has kind of been the thing throughout the summer. Whether it be a Thursday or Friday, the press box and the Blitz are out and about around town. But I want to give you a chance to enjoy something I just got some information. It won't be national. It'll be Koshkin in at 11. First thing, Craig.
Oh, Craig Koshkin.
Craig Koshkin will be in at 11 with Nick to do the Charlie Polillo show. So you will have local programming. So that's good news. But I did want to give you guys a chance to win something. If you like wrestling, this is for you. Don't call in right now because I haven't given you the number yet or even the read. So wait. WWE is returning to the road and will start at Toyota Center with Friday Night SmackDown on July 16th. That is tomorrow. This marks the first ever Friday Night SmackDown on Fox in Houston. Don't miss all of your favorite WWE stars. They return to the road for the first time in over a year. Very few tickets remain at toyotacenter.com. And that is why we're going to give you some tickets right now. So caller 10. Caller 10 to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to WWE SmackDown. You can see it at Toyota Center. They're back on the road, and they came to this city. So if you want to go, call in now. And the intern will let you know all the pertinent information, but you'll get an email probably in the next couple of hours about where you're going to get your tickets, how you get your tickets. So your caller 10, you got a chance to enjoy something pretty cool. WWE SmackDown Friday night here in town. So keep calling in if you haven't gotten in yet. Although at this point you might want to forget about it.
I mean, it's
just how it goes.
Well, phone lines are blowing up.
Yeah, we also will give away a couple of other things a little bit later in this hour, so stay tuned for that. I mentioned the finals before I went to break, and it was the most competitive game. Certainly, the one that actually went down to the fourth quarter as far as the final minutes and who would win. And I would have to give credit to who everyone knows is the Robin, although Kendrick Perkins continues to call him Batman, Middleton. I don't know if it's as simple as the Bucks go as Chris Middleton goes, but it just seems like if he has a good night, coupled with Giannis' consistent performances, the Bucks are going to be in games. The Bucks are going to win games, and they have to overcompensate for the disaster that is Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday is a tough defender. He's a guy who had a couple big rebounds in that fourth quarter. But he has been atrocious throughout most of these playoffs, so much so that he has been compared to a guy that always felt like he stunk in the playoffs, and that was Eric Bledsoe. Like, he's Eric Bledsoe, except he costs more as far as how much they're paying him, and he costs more as far as what it took to acquire him. I think it took 3 first-round picks and Eric Bledsoe to get Jrue Holiday, and he was supposed to be that missing piece, and he has been nothing short of a disappointment. And all that being said, they're still 2-2 in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, they have to feel good about themselves, and the Suns have to feel bad about themselves, because I believe going into the fourth quarter, the Suns were up 6 points, and then they hit like a three-pointer within the first 60 seconds of the fourth, and they went up 9. And to lose that lead, you got to feel some type of way if you're the Suns, but credit to the Bucks, man. And even Middleton. I mean, to your point about Holiday, like, I guess the positive when they were looking at him was that man, when he does play well, when he's on, he's like really, really on. And maybe sometimes that outweighs everything else. But yeah, he hasn't been what he has been in the playoffs. But Middleton, when you get an awesome performance out of him like that, it's really, really tough to stop. And the good thing about it, Giannis knows to defer to him, like when he knows his you know, he's got the hot hand. And he clearly did in the last 2 minutes of that game. The last 2 minutes of regulation, it was pretty much all Chris Middleton. So
yeah, even just going through Holiday's numbers since the sweep against Miami, even in game four, the one they won going away after being down, he only shot 33%. But he has. I'm just looking at the numbers now. He has four games shooting under 40% in the Nets series.
Mm-hmm.
He had two in the Atlanta series, and some of these are atrocious, like going 2-for-11, 5-for-23, 4-for-14. So when he's bad, he's really bad. And he's had three games in this series shooting under 40%, two of them under 30%. That's how bad he's been. But I kind of pointed out that it's really all about Chris Middleton. He probably wouldn't have to work as hard if they could get consistent performances from Holiday, and that'll be something that gets. Look, if you win, if they win this thing and they come back and win after being down 0-2, a lot of the Holiday stuff won't be remembered, but there'll be a discourse if they don't win this series about the production or lack thereof of Jrue Holiday. He's been a guy who's made these series, at least particularly the Nets series and maybe even a Hawks series, go longer than they should have because he just hasn't been up to the level that his teammates have been. And that's even when you include some of the off nights by Chris Middleton. So he's not the only point guard, though, who's struggled. Like, Chris Paul had a bad turnover late.
Two bad turnovers in the fourth,
yeah, and
I felt like.
And now he's got 15 turnovers over his last three games. And it's funny how they pull these stats up, these random things that aren't really stats until you try to make them. That's the most turnovers over a three-game span in the playoffs since 2012 for him.
Yeah, which is very unusual.
Yeah, he's not a guy who turns the ball over. And it starts to make people think about, oh, that's the Chris Paul we remember. Blowing 3-1 leads, losing series after being up, having bad elimination games. People are starting to speak. People who always had a little inkling, or at least had a little feeling about Chris Paul's ability to be big in big situations, they're leaning back the other way, saying, "Oh, that's the guy we remember. We remember. Don't forget just because he got to go through an injured Western Conference, that this is a guy who has found ways to come up small in big situations." And we'll see what he looks like back in Phoenix, but that's multiple games in a row where he hasn't played very well.
Well, there was, I say two only because there was one where they were still up, but it was one in particular turnover when they were not even in three digits yet. It was like 92-95 or something like that. They might have been up by either 3 points or 5 points, and he penetrated to the basket, tried to kick it out to either Booker or someone on the outside, and it was deflected. And that's what made the game close again. Either it was brought within 1 point or 3 points at that point. And I was telling myself that's a costly turnover because there's just over 3 minutes, maybe a slightly under 3 minutes left in the game at that point. And the last thing you want is to feel like you don't have it at that point in the game, you know? And sure enough, I felt like the other turnover was a similar situation. I felt like it was a forced pass. They had a couple inbounds pass that I felt like were just not necessary. And then credit to the Bucks defense, particularly that big block by Giannis late when they try to throw that alley-oop to Ayton. I mean, he was right there at the right spot. In most cases, Ayton would have just handled that ball and completed that play. But, I mean, great job by Giannis in that realm.
We've had a couple of remarkable plays in the series so far. You had Cam Johnson's dunk didn't lead to a victory. Was that in game three where the Bucks won anyway, where he dunked over PJ Tucker?
I think it was game three. Yeah.
Game three. But the Giannis play directly contributed to a Bucks win. So these are the moments when they build out that thing on NBA TV where they replay the best moments of the finals. Those are a couple that you'll see prominently. But most importantly, if the Bucks go on to win the series, that Giannis dunk will be something that'll probably be immortalized in Milwaukee lore. To be able to get back and not just get back and contest, but block and not foul is big. I won't point to it as a turning point, but it is something you'll say, the greatness of Giannis, his effort, his ability, his timing, all those things came into play on that one play. And he's not blocking a 6 foot five guy. That's a 7 footer who he stuffed and prevented late from getting a bucket.
His
from
knees
the Suns.
Look fine on that play, dude. The fact that he jumped, I think I read he jumped off the knee that was, I guess, hyperextended, for lack of a better word.
Uh-huh.
It's just amazing to me, after seeing that replay, that he can jump, block, pivot, change directions. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be on the... I mean, he was clearly in pain. Like, it wasn't like, let me sell this call. And maybe he added a little bit, but he was clearly in pain. To see that knee go in the direction that it did, and then to see him a few games later, you know, making defensive stops and big plays like that, is crazy to me.
The referees will get their share of the blame for kind of how those last couple minutes went down. But I enjoyed the physicality of that game. I hope they all trend that way. Sure, you want to have them to call obvious fouls, like the Booker foul on Drew Holiday
practically
late.
Hug them.
Yeah, dude. Those things you want to get called. But if they take the FIBA approach, which has been pointed to as a reason why the U.S. has struggled, at least in their first two games, their inability to get touch fouls, if they take that approach the rest of the way, I'll enjoy it. Now, the players would have to adjust on the fly. The whining would probably certainly increase. But if I can look at guys not being touched on the way to the rim and that simply being called a foul because that's what we've always done, I'd enjoy it. And then you think of, okay, the referee's allowed it to be physical, but they anticipated a foul on a trap that the Suns were trying to execute, and it led to free throws where the Suns were furious, saying, we weren't going to foul him. Why'd you call a foul? So the inconsistencies can probably be maddening for anyone who has a vested interest, certainly the players. But for me, give me all the nonsense you can in the rest of the way. I'm not a Bucks or a Suns fan. I don't care who wins. So if you want to add referee controversy, angry players,
by all means, do it.
Give it all to me. On the other side, I want to talk about something that it's COVID-related, but not really, as far as people getting vaccines or whether you should or not. It will directly affect a couple of college football things. I mean, Notre Dame's involved, and you know how much I love to talk about Notre Dame. But we'll talk about them and their new policy, and also what the Big 12 may be implementing to, you know, make sure players get vaccinated or avoid COVID altogether. We'll talk about that on the other side.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
I mentioned some interesting things in the Big 12 before we went to break, and I'll get to those. But first, I want to give you a chance to win something else. Like I said, this entire hour will be about giving you things, except Throw Shade Thursday. I'm not giving you that. I've made that executive decision. But if you're in a WWE fan, you won something in the previous segment. And if you're a boxing fan, you get to have a chance to win something now. Superstar world champion Jermell Charlo looks to make boxing history in his home state of Texas when he defends his super welterweight world titles against undefeated WBO world champion Brian Castano. Make sure to get your tickets now to see the live action. See the action live at attcenter.com or ticketmaster.com. The ATT Center should be a clue. That's in San Antonio. So it's not in town. You got to make sure you can get there. I didn't even give you guys the numbers yet. Can you X them out? Guys, I give you the numbers, then you call in. That's kind of how it works. We're actually giving away two pairs of tickets. So there'll be two winners on this occasion, and we're going to go with 8 and 9. 8 and 9. If you're caller 8 or 9, you win a pair of tickets to see Charlo versus Castano in San Antonio. We're going to provide you the tickets. You'll get an email later today about how all that works, but we don't give you travel. We're not paying for the trip or board or a hotel. So make sure you can get there. And you got a chance to see Charlo versus Castano. Charlo brothers, big-time fighters, and another big-time fight for Jermell this Saturday in San Antonio against Brian Castano. So call in, try to get in. Callers 8 and 9.
Word.
And as I mentioned, I did want to get into the Big 12 stuff only because I find it interesting, and it's in direct response to what happened last year. If you're a college football fan last year, you noticed quite a bit that either games were postponed or not played at all. A University of Houston fan would have noticed for about 4 or 5 straight weeks your games didn't get played because of issues involving other teams, most notably the Baylor game where the Houston truck, equipment truck was in Waco. The Fox people were there setting up, and then Baylor said, we don't have enough alignment to play, so we're not going to play the game.
Not cool.
No.
I could imagine if you're up there setting up all that heavy equipment. Oh, by the way, you can just pack all that stuff back up and just go home, because we're not gonna do this.
Now, last year, you weren't really punished for not being ready to play. Either the game was postponed, right, canceled, rescheduled. Somehow, some way, either the game was played or you weren't, or you didn't suffer any consequences. That's apparently going to change this year. According to Kansas State AD Gene Taylor, the Big 12 is not expected to allow teams to postpone or cancel games for any reason this fall. If a team loses a bunch of guys to COVID and can't play, the team will have to forfeit. It'll go as a loss on your record. So it's more,
it's more punitive.
Certainly, it puts a bigger stakes on your guys and your team as a whole not taking COVID seriously. I'm not sure if they're going to implement something the SEC is apparently talking about, where if 85% of your team is vaccinated, they won't even test. So you could have positivity on your roster, but as long as that team is at that threshold, we're not going to find out about it, and the game will go on as stated. Maybe you put a couple guys in quarantine because they're not feeling well. But
I feel like that eliminates the situation, because if you're a player, and even if you don't want to get the vaccine, but this is your time.
Yeah.
You're a college football player with a very short window. Like, if the rule is 85% and I don't have to get tested, plus I don't have nothing being stuck up my nose, like, yeah, I'll get vaccinated. I would imagine, the persuading part of getting people vaccinated in that realm would be easier, because you're talking about an athlete who only has a short amount of time to play
and doesn't want to miss games. You know, I mean, you may be an established starter, but if you're missing a couple weeks because of COVID protocols and another guy's playing, and
just a weird
he takes your job, and then
you could still test positive. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, the SEC, it appears, won't even test you if the team reaches 85% of that threshold. And the Big 12 is saying, hey, we're not into the rescheduling games. We're not moving things around. We're not building in weeks off to make sure we get games in. It'll just be a forfeit and your team loses. And that could affect not only the Big 12 standings, but if you're a college coach who's on the hot seat, you lose enough games that way, maybe you don't have a job. So at
do
the
you
end
consider
of the season,
that in the like let's say you're a team that's done very, very well, maybe you have one loss, maybe you don't have any losses with an exception of that forfeit. I mean, is that something you think the committee like looks into in consideration? Like, look, it wasn't necessarily a loss, it was a COVID loss.
We're using the Big 12 as an example, so we'll use Oklahoma because that's the only team,
basically.
Yeah, and that's a team who's favored to win the Big 12 and certainly has a good chance to make the playoffs this year. Their defense should be even better than it was last year, and Spencer Rattler is in his second year as a starter. If Oklahoma, let's say they had a game against K-State, which I believe they've lost to in the last couple seasons. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but they've lost. I think the Jalen Hurts year, they lost to K-State in Manhattan. If that's considered a forfeit because of COVID, and that is your one loss, or let's say it's your second loss, because maybe a one-loss Oklahoma makes the playoff anyway. Let's say it's your second loss.
Yeah.
And your other loss was to a surprising Big 12 team who's really good. I don't know who that would. Maybe they lose to Iowa State, which they did last year. But they lose to Kansas State, and that's your one loss, or your second loss. It could possibly, first of all, keep you out of the, and it's a forfeit situation, it could possibly keep you out of the Big 12 title game, for one thing. And let's say the committee ignores you not even getting to play in your Big 12 title game because they see it as a forfeit. Would they let a two-loss team in who they think is one of the best teams in the country if their only loss, if their only other loss was because of COVID?
What if it was a forfeit against the team that they were highly favored against?
Well, Kansas State, they would be highly favored against, but to your point, they're not an awful team. Like Kansas. Let's say they couldn't play against Kansas because of COVID issues, and the Big 12 says, that's a loss for you. I don't think they judge them and judge it the same if they had actually lost to Kansas. But I wonder, playing one less game, maybe it disqualifies you from the Big 12 title game, and it's your second loss. Do all those things come together to say, okay, Oklahoma, we know you're one of the best teams in the country, but you didn't even play in your title game, and we know it was because of a COVID situation, so we're going to give another opportunity to another team. We saw this last year at Ohio State. They didn't lose games, but things had to be arranged for them to get into the Big Ten title game, and despite playing less games, the committee said, you're in. But they didn't have a loss on their schedule. I think the only way it would affect a team like Oklahoma is if they already had a loss on their schedule, so it brought them back to the pack, and then you throw a COVID loss on the schedule, then they say, well, you didn't even get a chance to win your conference, so we're not going to put you in. I would imagine if you're Lincoln Riley, and I don't know if the Big 12 is going to offer that threshold, that you would want all your players vaccinated so you can avoid, and all coaches would want to.
I would imagine, because they want their players on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine, just to avoid the headache.
Yeah. Yep. And I said it, I wanted to stick with the Big 12, and I mentioned Notre Dame. There's one other thing in the Big 12, something very important to some people. If you went to that school in Austin, the Big 12 will officially start penalizing people who do the horns down.
Really?
Yes.
It's official?
If you do a horns down to a Texas player as an opponent, that's probably going to be a foul.
I don't know how you're more of the college football guy. I'm going to say that's super weak.
I'm reading the story as I go, and it came from the Big 12 coordinator of officials, Greg Burks. Apparently, if you do the horns down on your own sideline and you're doing it to your fans or even the Texas fans, it won't be a problem. But if you do it on the field, and if certainly if it's directed at an opponent, there's still some wiggle room as far as if you do it as a touchdown celebration, like you go in the end zone, like Will Grier did against Texas,
yeah,
and you throw the horns down. There's still some wiggle room on whether they'll penalize that, but it is something they're going to try to lock down because, you know, Texas people are apparently whiny and soft.
It just sounds like you're protecting the Texas program for whatever reason, you know. I mean,
yeah, look, as a Miami fan, we have our own hand symbol, and while North Carolina was beating our brains in last year, all those players are doing the U down, and sure, it'll piss you off in the moment as a fan, but there wasn't me going penalty. I was more upset because they're on the way to rushing for over 600 yards. So that was what my concern was.
Yeah.
But I never think to myself, oh, the North Carolina kids should really be penalized for what they're doing. But apparently it'll be a thing in the Big 12 because why? I don't know. Who else has a hand symbol in the Big 12? Like,
I don't know.
I'm trying to think of the teams that do. Would anyone else, like the Horned Frogs have that little frog thing that they do. If someone from Texas did it, would they penalize a Texas player? Probably not, but it's the Texas rule is what it is, because it's specifically about horns down, not about any hand celebration.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the reason why I feel like it's weak. And what about the mental aspect of all this? Like, do you think that's, you know, those rules are going to exist in the event some of these players make it to the NFL? Probably not.
No, like, it's silly. It's like, it's Texas fans being upset about something. You know what? You know what? I would say if you had more success over the last decade, there would be less horns down and you wouldn't even care about it. Like, if Texas wasn't on their, what are they on, their fourth head coach this decade? Or not this decade, but the previous, let's say the last 10 years, because Mac was there, I think, after 11, certainly. Yes, he was. So, yeah, Mac, Charlie Strong, Herman, and now Sark. You've had four coaches in the last 10 years. Yeah. If things are going better for Texas, this wouldn't be a thing. But now they're like, oh, people are being unfair to us.
Yeah, you had Mac from 98 to 13, Strong from 14 to 16, Herman from 17 to 2020, and then Sarkisian from 2021 to the present. So, yeah, they've had a rotation of head coaches at that program. Clearly not the same team that they've been like.
Well, they haven't been the same since Max Glory years.
Yeah.
I mean, I get into this thing quite a bit that in my lifetime, Texas has been good for about a decade. And that was because you had two transcendent quarterbacks back-to-back. You had Vince, and then you had an interlude of non-Vince when you had, I think you were running Chance Mock out there for a little bit. And then you had Colt, or it was Chance before. I don't know where Chance Mock played, but he was one of those guys who wasn't the guy. You had Vince, you had Colt, and they were great. They're making title games. But other than that, Texas has been a meh program my entire life. Now you have to go back to the Darryl K. Royal era for we to talk about the Texas Glory years besides the Mac years. But this is the reaction of a program who has been good and is apparently upset that people have decided horns down is a way to taunt you.
Yeah, I just think it's weak, and it's very iffy, particularly because you can still do the horns down sign in some capacity. It just depends on who you do it to. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah, I don't think the Big 12 doesn't even really know what they want to penalize other than horns down, making Texas people upset. So we're probably going to throw a flag. We're not sure.
It's going to be iffy.
Tom, I see you. I'm going to get to you on the other side if you'll hang on. You want to talk about what I said about horns down, or maybe just the whole thing in general. So if anyone else wants to call in, please do. We got one more segment to go before Craig Kochkin and Nick.
Tyler. Craig and Tyler.
Oh, you're here, right?
No, I'm going to be. I'm ahead on the Stack Pickle.
That's right. You're going to be out on the remote with Joel, the press box and the blitz out there at Stack Pickle. So Craig and Tyler will take you to one, and then the press box will be followed by the blitz. One more segment to go on the bench.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks!
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
No, John, he punked out at about 9. At least he told me he was punking out at 9:30. He punked out at 10. He won't be here tomorrow either. It'll be myself, Lance, and a special guest host. So we'll find out about that tomorrow. And also, Maurice Jones-Drew, he's not the special guest host, but he'll join us tomorrow. You know, Maurice Jones-Drew, former UCLA running back, former Jacksonville Jaguar. He probably had some good games against the Texans, because who doesn't? So he will join us tomorrow. So we'll talk to him about all things NFL. I'm sure some other stuff as well. Lance knows him personally from his time at NFL Network. Let's get to Tom. He has thoughts on either my comments on the horns down or the horns down thing in general. What's up, Tom?
What's up, guys? Hey, you had mentioned that you didn't think that the horns players would get penalized if we did a hand signal upside down. A couple of years ago, one of our guys was preparing to kick off against Texas Tech, and he holstered the guns and was immediately penalized. This was probably 5 or 10 minutes after one of their players had a good play and did the horns down, and there was no penalty. So what you're saying is wrong. And also, I should note that I don't care about the horns down. I think it's hilarious. I think it proves that we live in their minds all the time. For what reason, I have no idea, because we've sucked for the last 10 years. But when you see Oklahoma, you know, recruits or players or whatever, and every single one of their pictures on Twitter is a horns down, it just tells me that they're thinking about us, which I'm perfectly fine with. I think it's hilarious, but... Thanks for the content. You guys are awesome. Take care.
Thanks, Tom. I don't remember what if I said no one gets penalized for doing the if the Texas players did it. I don't think I did, but if I did, thank you for the correction. It's not so much that you know teams get penalized for it. It's that it's a big deal for Texas people, or it's a big deal that the Big 12 is discussing it for Texas. The Big 12 didn't mention, you know what we're going to do? Make sure Texas players don't taunt Texas Tech players with the holstering the guns. It's not. It's not a topic of conversation.
It really isn't
with anyone but the Texas Longhorns. It doesn't. It doesn't come up. OU doesn't have, I guess, a hand signal. Maybe they do. OU. I'm not sure what they do. But it's only a topic of conversation for Texas people, and maybe not for you, Tom. But it's enough of a thing where the Big 12 is talking about it at their media day. This is where all this is coming from, by the way. Big 12 media day started, and speaking of that, I'm gonna give you a quote. Nick, I'm blanking here. Obviously, I'm about done for the day. And I want you to figure out, is it a Big 12 championship winning coach or Lance Zierlein? And I want you to try to figure out maybe beforehand what I'm talking about before I get to it. But media days are going on. Sam Kahn Jr., who's, you know, has ties to this town, certainly in I believe he's an alumnus of the University of Houston and has covered them in the past. He was talking to Lincoln Riley about, you remember Lincoln Riley put out an awful picture of his brisket?
I do. I do remember it because I remember Twitter down here went crazy because they compared it to Lance's.
Yeah. And this is his quote about the brisket. It was a bad photo, but it wasn't a bad brisket. He said he wasn't sure why it looked dry, but it wasn't, and was in fact one of the best he's ever made. If I didn't give you the name Lincoln Riley, could you have just said, oh, that's Lance talking about his brisket?
Probably.
It is the exact refrain that Lance uttered when people said his brisket looked dry. It was a bad picture. And people I know said it didn't give the appropriate context for the brisket I made.
Dude, Lincoln's brisket looks so dry.
It looks like bark.
Yeah, like.
Bad bark, not the bark you get on brisket and you're happy about it. Actually looks like tree bark.
Yeah, like you did it slice into like brisket slice. You get what I'm saying?
I'm
like,
looking at it right now.
It looked like chopped beef more than anything else.
That's what it looks like. Look, I don't know where Lincoln Riley originates from, but I'm going to just say he doesn't know what a good brisket tastes like. Because if he thinks what that picture gives me the impression, he took a saw to the side of a tree and started chopping off bits.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you got, bits, like pieces.
Yeah.
Nothing sliced like brisket is supposed to be. I mean, look, someone who's in the brisket or barbecue game is smart enough that he has around him that could have told him, yo, that brisket wasn't on point.
No, you heard him. It was one of the best he ever had.
I mean, dare I say Lance's dry brisket was better looking than Lincoln Riley's dry brisket?
I mean, as much as I enjoy taking shots at Lance, it's not even a comparison.
Yeah.
Lance's brisket was brisket. That was chopped beef wood that Lincoln Riley provided as far as pictures are concerned.
I used to go to this barbecue spot by my dad's shop just because it was convenient. I'd always eat the chopped beef like sandwich. I'd always order that. It looked exactly like that without the buns. You know what I mean? Like, it was bad. He left that brisket in there for like 48 hours or something on high heat.
One other college football thing before we wrap this thing up. I mentioned a couple segments ago, this doesn't affect the games itself. It does affect how you cover them. If you are in a position like us who do this job, whether it be radio or going out to practices, Notre Dame has said that anyone covering their sports has to be fully vaccinated. If you're on campus covering their sports, you have to be fully vaccinated. So national media, local media, you know, the South Bend Tribune or whatever it's called, if the Athletic has, I'm sure they do have someone covering Notre Dame. If you're not fully vaccinated, you can't cover their games. It's in part to protect, you know, their student athletes and just make sure they can keep COVID as far away from their student athletes as possible. So interesting. I wonder if other universities will adopt that policy.
I saw that, but I feel like if you, like every program knows who like the main media is for their team, the most important people. I feel like most national media are vaccinated anyway. So they might have like the information, like maybe I'm not saying they have like a list because that's obviously like confidential, but they probably have like a good grasp of people that actually cover Notre Dame that are actually vaccinated. So like when they had their main, like I'm just assuming this is speculation. Maybe when they had their main list of people that they know are vaccinated and cover Notre Dame, who cares about the, like prioritize. Who cares about the smaller media that may or may not be vaccinated? Yeah. Maybe it's a filtering process. Because I feel like to a certain... I saw that story, and one of the first things that came up to my mind, and I don't know if you think this is even possible, they have a good idea of the main media members that covered them that are probably already vaccinated.
I think it'll be as simple as provide your vaccination card.
Yeah.
I think it'll be as simple as that. I don't know.
One-time thing, probably.
Maybe they put you on a list and say, once you provide that vaccination card, you don't ever have to do it again. But until you do, you can't cover our athletes. I wouldn't be surprised if it's as simple. They'll have a running list. Anybody who shows up who they don't have a confirmation from will have to provide that card or some note or the note from the doctor online, however it's saved. And if you don't do it, you can't cover it.
Like what if I'm an NBA team and I'm thinking about enforcing this rule, right? But I know Woj is probably vaccinated. I know all the big NBA national guys are vaccinated. The three or four beat reporters and maybe the three or four television stations that cover my team, I know those guys are vaccinated. Why not just employ some rules saying that if you're not vaccinated, you can't cover the Rockets, you can't cover the Mavericks.
Yeah,
you can't,
I would wonder if it's not only that. Maybe they did it in consult with the people who they know cover their team all the time, just to limit access to the team, particularly in Notre Dame's case, and say, hey, look. I don't know who their guys are. I don't know who runs Irish Illustrated or whatever, but the guys who run that or the rival site who covers them go, look, guys, we're gonna let you guys know beforehand that this will be a rule that we're going to put in place, and maybe it's just a way to, you know, you want a credential? Ah, sorry, we don't have proof that you're vaccinated, yeah. So you can't cover us.
You can't come in. Sorry,
but you can't be on campus. I mean, it's a way to just limit access if we're going with a cynical approach. Or maybe it's as simple as provide a card and you're in. Once you go through all the other things you have to do to get credentials, but provide your vaccination card and you get to cover the team. If you don't, you can't. So we'll see if that kind of becomes a thing. It's the first time I've heard of that for a college team to ban people based on whether they've been vaccinated or not. We'll see how far that goes. But we do know their conference is putting things in place to make testing kind of null and void if you reach a certain threshold with vaccination. So the college football season's coming up pretty shortly. I mean, camp starts in less than a month. So there'll actually be real discussions about football. Because right now, media days are starting. The Big 12 is going on right now. SEC is next week, and things will follow after that. So we're getting closer and closer. And we know NFL training camp starts in a couple weeks here with the Texans, I think, on the 28th. So it's less than 2 weeks away. So football is around the corner.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of you, depending on who you root for, that's a good thing. For others, it's like, oh no.
For you, you're fine because it's college football for you all day.
Yeah, and apparently my NFL team's going to be pretty good, but they're known to disappoint, so we'll see how that goes. That's the end of this random hour of radio that came about out of really nowhere because John couldn't do the last hour and Lance is never here.
John doesn't communicate?
No, he communicated with you.
He
didn't tell me, which is...
You probably would have pulled the same move.
No, if I know I'm not going to be someplace, I'll tell people.
Tell them in the middle of the show, you know what? I'm not going to be here for the third hour.
Nah, I think I'm considerate. He would have known way before. But we're done. Tyler and Craig Koshkin are next. They're filling in for Charlie Polillo. You have the Blitz, but they're preceded by the Press Box, and they're all going to be on remote at the Stack Pickle. You want to go out there? What's the address, Nick?
You won't put me on the spot like that.
You're going out there. I assume you knew.
Well, I was going to put it in the
GPS,
but I'll tell you right now because you put me on 6944 FM 1960 Road West.
Yeah,
6944 FM 1960.
So if you want to see the shows out there, check them out. It's going to be a new place. No one's really been out there, at least as far as the station's concerned. Should be a good time. I appreciate everyone listening. We'll be back tomorrow.